Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on a match that was once very competitive, a derby that has lost its appeal a little bit between Manchester United and Manchester City because it's just so uneven now. And we'll talk about a lot that happened today on the pitch. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Joel Parker. Joel, welcome.
Hello, Eric. Hello, listener. I want to begin by discussing that at Between the Posts. We always like to try and cover really fun, interesting games of football. So this is a disclaimer that sometimes it can go wrong. And United City, over the years, at least in recent years, hasn't been entirely entertaining. And yeah, it wasn't really... Well, it was one of those games that fell into that bracket, I thought.
Honestly, Joel, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he does have a good record against Guardiola. So we kind of could have predicted that he could have gotten a result here, could have hoped for.
That's very true. I think that one of the reasons why Solskjaer's had good success against Pep is the fact that he can really make these games incredibly ugly for the viewer. And he does that by real compact block and having the right profiles in the transition, you know, Anthony Martial. I think Dan James even had one really good game against them, and usually Marcus Rashford, who wasn't in the team today, and we'll get onto that. So, yeah, it's a good point to bring up.
And if we are being honest, Solskjaer had some smart tactical plans in recent years, which kind of worked, but today not so much. Tell me a bit about their lineup today.
Well, one thing that Solskjaer has done recently has been changing to the 5-3-2 formation, which we saw against Tottenham, we saw in the week against Atalanta. He kept with that here. His team had some pretty big exclusions as well. There was no Rafael Varane in the middle of defence. Cavani was also injured and Paul Pogba was suspended. So that's three pretty big names that they've been missing. But yeah, so United's team, De Gea was in goal. Victor Lindelof joined the defence with Eric Bailly and Harry Maguire to the sides of him. In the wing-back positions, Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Luke Shaw, which is pretty common for Solskjaer. And also in these big games, we've seen the classic McFred partnership being deployed, pretty much the indication that he's taking this as a big game. So those two were in. Fernandes was joining in the midfield to make it a midfield three. And up front was Greenwood and Ronaldo, which was a pretty odd choice considering that your one form of attacking against City for 99% of clubs is on the transition. Mm. And Greenwood and Ronaldo aren't really those sort of profiles that we were talking about.
So you think he should have started with Sancho or Rashford, etc.? That would have been better.
I think he should have started with Rashford personally. With Rashford, you have those real direct runs behind the defensive line, something that Rashford was doing really well in the first Atalanta game, continuously moving in behind, making good runs. The goal against Tottenham, admittedly Tottenham's defence was really, really poor, but a very good movement to get back onside, moving forward again. So for me, that was kind of the obvious choice, but yeah, no Rashford today.
Yeah, could have made some other choices, but apparently he rates Greenwood pretty highly as well. As for City, they just played 4-3-3 with a false nine. That's nothing new for them, but there were, of course, slight variations in every game. It's very tempting to say that whenever De Bruyne or Bernardo Silva or Foden plays as the striker, that it's a false nine. But that's not always the case. Sometimes City just play against a team with De Bruyne as the striker occupying the last line, or with Foden doing that stuff. But today it was very clearly that they did play with a false nine. So to be complete, they had Ederson in goal as always, Walker at right back, Cancelo at left fullback, but he's not really a fullback, he's more of a central midfielder, Ruben Dias and Stones in the middle. So no Laporte, that was interesting. Rodri as the number six played really well, Gundogan and De Bruyne alongside him in central midfield, Foden on the left being left-footed, Gabriel Jesus on the right, being right-footed, and Bernardo Silva, I just mentioned it, as the striker, but he really played as the false nine. He came into midfield a lot. If you go look at the pass map on our website or on our Twitter account, you can see as well he had the majority of his ball touches on the midfield. So that worked really well for them. And that was kind of their basic approach. So, Joel, we just mentioned that Man U in recent seasons had some success against City with a kind of a, dare I say, Jose Mourinho approach. Very defensive and on the counterattack. And that's what we saw today as well, right? Because how did you see their defensive plan?
Well, I think that was the aim from early on. Manchester United sat really deep, medium to low block, kind of what we was anticipating. But even in the early stages, Man City were having routes forward. And, you know, as early as 6 minutes into the game, Man City take an early lead. And I think that that big game approach was forced out the window a lot sooner than what Solskjaer would have hoped.
Yeah, I saw that as well. For people who are listening very clearly, of course, I said Laporte wasn't in the team. That was interesting, but I, of course, meant that he had a red card last week, so he was not in the team. And it was interesting that Stones was playing for that reason. Not that I said he was dropped for the nitpickers anyway. I know he was suspended. But yeah, about the game itself, from that defensive plan, Joel, I thought it was strange how the players were lined up in the first place, because you had five defenders at the back, okay. Then you had Fred and McTominay in front, but then it was Bruno Fernandes as the right central midfielder, who was the third central midfielder in that line. And then you had Greenwood like 5 yards higher as the number 10, and then Ronaldo as the non-pressing striker. And I thought that was strange. I think I would have switched Greenwood and Bruno. So make Bruno the number 10, the first outlet if you regain the ball, because he's very press resistant and he can launch Ronaldo on the counter. But now Bruno spent the majority of his match just chasing the ball on that right side against Cancelo and Foden. And don't think that's the best role for him. And Greenwood, being a right winger, is kind of used to that, to track runners on that side. So I thought that was a bit strange as well from Solskjaer.
Yeah, it was a really dysfunctional shape. And I think one thing that has come out in real recent weeks is this sort of half-baked pressing that Manchester United try to do. We saw it a lot against Liverpool. I think here was a lot more dysfunctional, in the sense that you had Greenwood sort of man-marking, sort of tracking Rodri's movements, but then also having the two wide centre midfielders, Fred and Fernandes, both really pushing up depending on where the ball was. Mm-hmm. So you had a real dysfunctional shape. Ronaldo spearheading the whole thing without really pressing, whilst men behind him would either be triggered forward quite quickly or sort of leisurely stroll forward. And this really was a playground for Man City to do a lot of nice stuff in possession.
Yeah, for me, the fullback stood out. In particular, we know Kyle Walker will never be the best playmaking fullback in the world, but I actually think he did nice today, also because he had a lot of space, which you pointed out as well. And Cancelo was one of the best players on the pitch for me, man. I'm not sure how you view that, but I really liked his game today, Cancelo.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Both players were really, really progressive when they got on the ball. I know that 5-3-2 formations, actually, there's not a lot of width. Naturally, the team in possession, their fullbacks are kind of relied upon to take the ball forward and carry the ball forward. But even in this case, you know, Cancelo and Walker were taking 5 or 6 touches without really being confronted by anybody. Mm-hmm. And in the first half in particular, Walker and Cancelo had a hell of a lot of fun, a hell of a lot of combinations out wide, and particularly on the left. You know, Foden really gave Wan-Bissaka a bad time at times. Yeah. When Cancelo was receiving in so much space, Foden continuously making movements in behind, and that was the bulk of their chance creation.
Mm, yeah, true. And one last thing to note about Manchester City's plan against this 5-3-1-1 is, you know, the dynamic between De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. Bernardo Silva, of course, playing into midfield as a striker. And then Maguire had to think, do I come out of the last line? Maguire did that a lot of times, actually very, very far, stepping out of the back line. And then De Bruyne on that side, just making use of that space, going in behind, asking for the ball, constantly playing 2-3 touches and then moving on. And I thought that was today a really strong aspect of their game, but overall, that's one of the most well-developed aspects of their game, how De Bruyne interacts with Bernardo Silva and Foden, if he's on that side as well. And Man U just could not cope for them.
Yeah, there was a lot of classic Man City movements, you know, De Bruyne moving into half spaces, but I also thought Gundogan and Bernardo Silva could partake in this as well. Mm-hmm. I said on the left side, you know, you had Foden and Cancelo, but even De Bruyne was moving into those channels as well. So I feel like when you have a real team that presses high up against Man City, that's where the real delicious patterns form. But they can do this against low blocks as well and do this against teams that try and defend more compactly against them. So it's really, really impressive from Man City.
Yeah, and we really enjoyed City today. We didn't prepare this. Do you know what my favorite statistic is in football? Do you know that?
My favorite is that out of all the players to get red cards for Holland in European Championships, I think it's European Championships, but they've all come against the same team, which is a stat that I really like.
Czechoslovakia. Yeah. I'm not sure how this came into your head, but I think you're right. Because 1976, we went out against what was then Czechoslovakia, and last year in the summer, we went out against Czech Republic. So two times with a red card. That's amazing that you brought that up for my answer. But you know what my favorite stat is?
What is your favorite stat, Eric?
It's whenever a team scores a goal without having a shot on target. That's what happened here in the sixth minute.
It's the fact that I think Man United defenders had more shots on target against their own goalkeeper shots on target up the other end.
I thought I just set it up a little bit, but now we are expanding on this. But it's actually true that if a defender accidentally shoots in his own target, then we as stats community do not count it as a shot on target. So in the sixth minute, City scored without having a shot on target because it was an own goal from Bailly.
I think one thing that's also quite notable in that phase was that even in those situations, both fullbacks mm-hmm. were in a hell of a lot of space to get into good crossing positions, and Man City kept the pressure up, and that's kind of what happens. You know, a real low ball. Eric Bailly's quite unlucky, I feel, because he reads it quite well, and I think it was Foden that put the ball in, but I'm not sure who was behind, mm-hmm. who made the run, but he read the play well. But yeah.
It's good that you brought it back to football tactics again, because this is a football tactics podcast, not a quiz podcast about the Dutch national team with its very rich history of messing up and tournaments. Anyways, yeah, so I thought that even though it was a bit unlucky from Bailly to put that into his own goal, it was the result of a clear tactical pattern. We saw both fullbacks in a lot of space because of good positional play, because of three midfielders not being able to occupy all the City players. And that's what we saw. And frankly, we saw it in the entire first half. But I do say that Man U had one good spell in the entire match. Let's say one spell in the match was kind of even. And that was from minute 30 until 45 or something.
Yeah, that's true. United had a little bit more playing possession at that point. But even in these phases, you know, this was kind of the Man United that we've seen pretty much all season, you know. Mm-hmm. No real transitional threat. One thing that I thought was quite noticeable was that both Greenwood and Ronaldo were dropping on a good amount of phases that they did have when they had the ball. And as a result, there was no real pinning from Man United players onto Man City's defence. So in terms of Man City defending, I don't think they'll have an easier ride. Other than I think Ronaldo had one decent attempt on Edison, and the rebound was a bit too quick for Greenwood to read. But other than that, I think that was Man United's threat throughout the whole first half, really.
Yeah, and I think in this phase that I mentioned, Ronaldo had one chance to get on the score sheet, volley with his left foot. But yeah, Manchester United cannot expect Ronaldo to turn water into wine all the time, because he scored almost double the amount of goals compared to his expected goals And even Ronaldo will have a finishing drought at some point. But he would have really carried the team if he shot that one in as well, because against Atalanta, it was like two chances, two goals. And yeah, if that's the game plan, I have bad news for Man United fans, because that's not going to hold up well. We do get a second goal, however, 1 minute before halftime. Did you catch that going in, watching live? Because I thought it was a goal kick.
See, what happens when I usually watch games that I'm covering, I usually have one of the football apps registered on my phone, and it usually comes up with a notification the moment it goes in. So the notification came up, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll make sure that I'm 100% fully focused on this moment. And even then, I still didn't really clock on that the ball went in. And I don't think any supporter that was...
No, it was really...
clocked on either. It's really strange.
Delayed reaction.
Just, yeah, literally no reaction at all from anyone. And then
the ball was in.
Start celebrating.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really strange. But this was also quite indicative of what Man City did well throughout the game, and that was in terms of their switching. With fullbacks in so much space, with Man United really narrow, there was a hell of a lot of switches going on that put Man City into really good positions. And the play sort of moves from that sort of pattern. Cancelo receives in a hell of a lot of space. The ball funnels back on the right. There's a really nice combination between Walker passing to Jesus, back to Gundogan. And yeah, it was a really, really nice how the play sort of funneled back onto the left from Silva to Cancelo. A really nice ball into the area. And I don't think even Luke Shaw was really registering the fact that Silva was right behind him. So yeah, a real surprise goal.
Yeah, well, I do think that it was a bit of a free goal, but still, I think Shaw is at fault there because he doesn't have the awareness. He thinks it will be out for goal kick, but he doesn't register the runner. But also, De Gea, I'm not exactly a goalkeeping expert, but I think De Gea should do better there because he slaps at the ball and doesn't really get it. So that was awkward.
Yeah, that is very true. And because I think De Gea had a really good first half as well. For as we say, I'm not a goalkeeping expert either, but he really kept Manchester United in the game
for
long periods.
He really stopped so many shots.
Yeah, so, and once
also,
again...
Also of his own defenders.
I think even Lindelof had a shot that was well saved from him, so...
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, first half, clearly City's way. At halftime, Solskjaer switches it up again. He brings Sancho for Bailly. He turns into a 4-2-3-1 again, which is very familiar. Not that strange. Double pivot is the same. Bruno plays as the 10. Sancho and Greenwood on the wings, and Ronaldo as the non-pressing striker still. What do you make of this change?
I thought what was pretty interesting was how the game state sort of went United having a lot of the ball in the first 15 minutes of the second half. But once again, these were kind of the same issues that we've seen all season with Manchester United. You know, the forwards were continuing to drop, a lot of lateral passes going on, Man City being really comfortable in their defensive shape. And because there was no real movements in behind, because there was no patterns of play flowing through, it was just a lot of aimless possession, which was a shame, really, because with a front line as good as what Man United have got, you know, you kind of expect a lot more engagement from them in the final third, but we had none of that whatsoever.
I don't like to do it because I think a podcast should always be able to be listened to in isolation, but once again, I'm going to refer to our pass maps, because if you look at the pass map from United, which we posted on our Twitter, and you can also find it on our website, betweenthepost.net/plots. It's very clear to see that they were so far away from goal when they received the ball, like literally. Every single United player on average received the ball on their own half.
It just goes to show that if your plan B doesn't work, make sure you revert back to the plan A, which also doesn't work in the first place, which makes you switch to a plan B. So... Yeah.
You know what's funny? Do you remember when all the City fans were continuously shouting, Ole's at the wheel, at the wheel? did you notice that?
I did notice that. I also noticed Liverpool fans doing that the other week.
But Dutch people now think that the entire Old Trafford was singing Donnie van de Beek, van de Beek. It's not a joke. I saw that.
Hey, like, he came on with 10 minutes left.
Yes, but it's not a joke. Praise people in the Netherlands actually think that Donnie is one of the most popular players of Man U because the whole stadium was singing his name. But in reality, it was City fans who were singing Ole, is that the wheel? Anyways, that was fun as well for me to mention. So, actually, United had more possession in that first 15 minutes of the game after halftime. Couldn't create anything, man. And after that, it was City again suffocating Man U with possession. And I can say one thing as well, you know. I think it was very clear that all the City players looked really comfortable on the ball. And of course, they all have a really good technique. But it's also easier to look as comfortable as the ball if you know what you're doing. So if I receive the ball and I know, okay, the next pass can be A, B, or C, and all those players are exactly in that position, then I know, okay, I play that pass. And the next player as well, he looks around, he knows, okay, I have option A, I have option B, I have option C. And that's why the City players look so comfortable on the ball and recycling it all the time. And I'm going to refer to the fans again, but there are, after every pass, you heard that, ole, ole, and you know, and that was also because their position game is so well defined at this point. It's so relatively easy to execute. And that's why they look technically so good, all those players, because they can just let the ball go around, man, and nobody takes more than three touches. It's amazing.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I will say is that Man United switched to a sort of 4-4-2/4-2-3-1. One thing I will say is that Manchester United could actually put a little bit more pressure on the fullbacks. I say a bit more, but even then, you know, the fullbacks were still really, really comfortable. Rodri was now completely free to receive in the middle of the field. And yeah, Manchester City totally killed the game. Killed it just by running through patterns and passing moves that we're quite, you know, we expect from them. So it was really comfortable for Man City. Probably the most comfortable I've seen them running down the clock, at least against a big club. You know,
am I correct that City did not make one sub?
Yes.
So yes, they left the £100 million signing on the bench.
Awkward, right?
They totally annihilate Man U. Only 2-0, but still by far the better team. And they leave the most expensive player of the history on the bench.
I was kind of expecting him to come on because at least then you're guaranteed at least 5 free kicks or 10 free kicks. But even then, you know, Man City just looked so, so comfortable. They just put themselves in one gear and just stayed at that gear for, you know, 45 minutes. Really, really relaxing stuff for them. And even then, they still had one or two chances where that switch out to the left became really accessible. There were a couple of times that Wan-Bissaka was still getting overloaded off the ball. And Foden hit the post with 10 minutes left.
Yeah, you know who gave the ball away?
I'm not sure.
Donnie van de Beek. Van de Beek.
Oh, no.
It's true. He made 10 minutes and the only thing he actually did that impacted the match was give the ball away to City.
You know, he's just building up a real decent phase of getting 5-minute cameos.
But we make jokes, but the guy is really a talented footballer. He was in the Dutch team at 21 years old. You know, he really made an impact for Ajax as well. And it's really sad to see him in this team and coming off the bench for 10 minutes and then get played into the double pivot, even though he's in number 10, you know? And I'm like, what the heck is going on here?
That Ajax run that they had in the Champions League a few years ago, I honestly thought Van de Beek was, other than perhaps De Jong, who was also in that team, mm-hmm. I thought Van de Beek was comfortably one of the players that you associate with that team. And I remember when Man United signed him at the time, and I messaged you,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering, did it make sense? Did it make sense at the time?
You know, it made sense in the context that they played that first season in a 4-4-2 diamond for a couple of weeks with Van de Beek and Pogba as the central midfielders.
Yeah, that's
then they had
true.
Like zero balance, because that's not really a thing you can do, I think, at the club level. And then they returned to 4-2-3-1 again. And then, yeah, you know, Bruno is the number 10. There's no discussion about that. And he's never injured. So there's that. But also, it would have made kind of sense if in the first season, he is like a squad player and he plays Carabao and he plays 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And then the second season, he's a starter and there's kind of a long-term plan with him.
Yeah.
But no, there was zero long-term plan with him at all. And to be honest with you, to make the discussion a bit broader again and not about cool Dutch players, I do think the midfield is the biggest problem for United. I think that if, let's say, if a Pochettino or a Ten Hag or whatever, if a good possession-based manager comes along tomorrow, I think that midfield needs serious, serious reshuffling. Because I don't think Fred and McTominay can play in a possession-based style. I don't think there are any mechanisms at all now. I think, if anything, they don't only need a good manager, they need two guys that can be build-up players.
I think what is quite sad as well is that that's being the discussion from at least the people that I follow from you know, Man United
Twitter. For years.
They've been saying that for a hell of a long time.
Yeah.
And there was also a quite nice discussion that we had in the week about whether Conte would be suitable for, or better suited for either Spurs or Man United. And yeah, Manchester United just don't have those type of midfielders. They don't have mm-hmm. those type of profiles in midfield, nor do they have those profiles as wingbacks. You know, Wan-Bissaka and Luke Shaw, quite conservative players. I know Shaw can have some real positive moments going forward. He's quite good when he's moving in the half spaces. One thing that was quite noticeable for England in the Euros was that he was doing that quite well. But no, out of that midfield, it is unproductive, both in possession and what it gives you in the final third.
Yeah, so let's not make this the entire anti-Ole Solskjaer podcast, because we know in the Twitter analytics community, everyone has a very clear opinion on him. And it's quite obvious that would be the first thing I would do if I was Manchester United director of football. But it's very easy to dunk on Solskjaer, because everyone is doing that, but there are really, really good arguments for making a manager change and bringing in Ten Hag, Graham Potter, if you are feeling a bit, how should I say it? If you feel a bit ballsy and you want to take a bit of risk, you know? But I don't think that's really an original opinion. The proof is on the pitch that it would be a good idea, I think.
Yeah, and I think that with the way that things have gone, you can see that there's no real process that is involved. It's game by game. It's slowly getting over a benchmark that is set really low.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been bailed out a hell of a lot of times because they have a really good striker up front.
Yeah. Anyways, enough about that. United win 2-0. Let's talk about City for a bit. I feel they are better than last season, even though that is a bit of a strange thing to say, because last season they, of course, reached the Champions League final, and of course they were champions last season, but I feel like they have improved somehow. Do you agree with me? Or I looked at some numbers, but it doesn't really point out that they are so much better, but I don't know. If I see them play, they look more fluid than earlier. I don't know.
I think in possession, they are.
Mm, good one.
I say that in the sense that, you know, there were a hell of a lot of games last year where they were capable of playing this really flexible style, but at a slower pace against low blocks. Mm. Well, I mean, they're up against low blocks all the time, but at a slower pace and not really creating as much cutback chances as they usually do. But in possession, I think they're a hell of a lot more refined. And even off the ball, you know, we haven't discussed it today, but they're still the best counter-pressing team I think, in the Premier League.
Wasn't,
and that
wasn't really needed today.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's something that Rodri does really,
really
well.
Yeah, he was really good today as
he's
well.
One of my favourite players. He's just so... The way that he steps forward is so... It's aggressive, but he also seems really calm. And just seeing him move forward, it's like, ah, yeah, it's cool. You know Man City are winning the ball back.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Also true, but it's also worth keeping in mind that they did lose to Crystal Palace last week, and that's not to discredit Crystal Palace.
No, of course.
What's going on there is actually really, really interesting, and just the reshape they've had. But in that game also, Man City didn't create much in that game. So it's also worth keeping that in mind. But yeah, this is a really, really good team. And to be honest with you, I think we're in for a really good title race.
I hope so.
Between three clubs that are all playing real, real high level stuff.
I nearly forgot who was champion last season, so it couldn't hurt to be a bit more memorable this season, right? No joke. But yeah, I think we're done here. If anyone is listening for Football Tactics, you can shut off now, and I will thank you for listening. But I have one, because you brought it up, Joel, one football romantic thing that I'm going to discuss with you for a couple of minutes before we actually quit.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Czech Republic for a bit, and I have a quiz question for you. No, I have a little quiz question for you. So you said that every Dutch red card at the European Championship was against Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia. That's true. 2021, it was Matthijs de Ligt. 1976, it was Johan Neeskens and Wim van Hanegem. But 2004, it was another player who got a red card against Czech Republic, and he is a former Everton player. Who was he?
Oh.
I got you there, eh?
You have got me there.
Come on, former Everton player, centre-back? Dutch?
Was it Johnny Heitinger?
Yes, it was Johnny Heitinger, then playing right-back. But the reason I bring this up is just for fun, obviously, but that Czech Republic team was really good, and for some reason we almost played them every European Championship, every World Cup qualifier team. They had an amazing team with Rosicki, Nedved, of course, Koller and Barros, Uifaluši, all those kind of stuff. And that was really one of the teams I loved the most when I started watching football, actually. So it's fun that you brought that up.
I'm pretty sure that game was, I mean, I was only about 4 at the time.
You were -5. Must
have been. But I'm pretty sure that game was a really wild game.
Uh-huh.
Am I right in saying that?
True. It was 3-2 for the Czech Republic, 2-0 for us. And we had an amazing team. Van Nistelrooy, Robbe, Davids, Cocu, Seedorf, Jaap Stam, Van der Sar in goal. Czech Republic had better Czech in goal, by the way. So amazing team.
And look how far you've become.
Yeah, amazing. So that was just for the football romantics. thanks for discussing this match with me. And I think we did well to find a balance between what you hear so often now. Oh, Solskjaer has to be fired. They're so negative, but also kind of praising the stuff Guardiola did here. And I don't know. I don't really particularly like the climate on social in regards to managers like Solskjaer or whatever, or Nuno earlier. But yeah, I do think it would be the only wise football decision to get a better manager in, especially with the resources Man U have. I think they can. So I think we struck a good balance here between those two extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And yeah, it's also quite here is this game in particular was a major difference between what a good coach can bring and not having a good coach can bring. You know, mm-hmm. Man City, Man United, their spending is quite similar.
Yeah. True.
Their attacks, you know, are absolutely stacked full of players. And yeah, I think today was a real, real indicator of just how important it is to have a real top coach at a top team.
Did you watch Tottenham against Vitesse at all or not?
I did not. No, I did see the training goal that they scored, aka the first goal. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was the first goal. But
I didn't watch the game as well, but I see a goal in my timeline and I'm like, That's not Tottenham. That's Inter. That's how I saw Inter play for two seasons, with three at the back, two in front, same rotations. If pass A is played, then the forwards go deep. If pass B is played, the forwards look at the space in behind, pass around the corner. And I'm like, yo, I saw this goal scored by Inter a couple of times. And now Conte has two training sessions and Tottenham scores it.
Even Harry Kane got involved. And that is something that I was not expecting so quickly. Because I mean,
is Harry Kane disliked in the UK in general after this summing?
No, not really. Not really. I think he's still quite revered as a real top level striker. But even having covered the Tottenham Man United game last week, you know, he was just not involved whatsoever, which was really, really odd because he drops all the time, connects all the time.
Yeah.
And as you say, even within like two training sessions,
okay,
he's
nice.
Getting involved in the goal.
Okay. Yeah. Good chat. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with me, Joel. And we will not be back next week because of the international break. So no podcast next week, but we will be back again soon. Even though I have to do surgery on my knee and I'm not sure how long I will be out of the rotation after that, but we'll see. We'll see. If you don't see it pop up, then you know that I'm still in hospital. And if you do see it pop up, then I'm back with in crutches, but still podcasting.
Back and better than ever.
I hope so. Yes. Thanks. And don't worry. I make it sound a bit grave, but it's just ACL surgery. It's nothing new, but apparently you can't really do anything for 4 or 5 days. So I hope we are back quickly with the podcast, but I cannot promise anything. Thanks for listening, and we will be back as soon as possible. Thanks, Joel. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.